The story of Elisha and the human bet, carrot salad. You ask why this carrot out of everything. So really the original reason why I chose to talk about this was because I was supposed to get up here last week, although it was bumped to this week because of the special Sneas week, and it was last week's Haftorah. Haftorah started by year. So that was my initial reason for preparing this year. And it's still last week's Haftorah, and we see amazing connections to last week's Parsha as well. That was one reason. Number two, as you'll see, it's a very perplexing, intriguing, fascinating parrot with a very powerful message. So that's maybe a more important reason. And thirdly, many of you know I have a certain obsession with Haftorah Shul. As I teach a course at the Museum, and this can be considered, in a certain sense, the Haftasha of Chabakuk. Because according to Chazal, this is a story about Elisha declares that the Shunamit will have a child. That child subsequently dies and then is revived by Elisha. According to Chazal, this child is Chabakuk. So in a certain sense, this could be a Haftasha, his birth story, and maybe his initiation that might impact the nevuah that he gives later. So I thought that would be interesting to look at it as well. Okay, what we're going to see is that there are astounding links between this story, the story of Elisha and the Shunamit and Malachim Beth Perek Dalet, and the Parsha Vayera, that Chazal attached it to. Right? The Torah and the Parsha are very, very strongly linked. We'll see linguistic links, thematic links, and more important than that, than noticing the links that we see, is we'll see that the fact that they're drawn together through so many links, the story, the Haftorah with the Parsha, we'll see that that sheds light on what's unique about the story of the Shunamit. It will help bring the uniqueness of this story into sharper focus. And even more astoundingly, what we're going to see is the link between the Haftorah and the Parsha of last week will resolve certain very perplexing questions in the Haftorah that we'll just not know what to do with. And the only answers that we'll have will come from the link with the Parsha. So this is, it could be even a test case for something you could do with any Haftorah and Parsha. You could take any Haftorah and Parsha and look for the links and then try to see how these links enlighten either the Parsha or the Haftorah, show the uniqueness of one or the other. You could really do this with any Haftorah Parsha. This is just one example. Okay, so let's read the story inside. From Malachim Beth Perek Dalet, which is one side of your source sheet. Okay, as I said, the basic storyline is we have this woman from Shunem, and she shows tremendous hospitality to Elisha. She builds him an attic, and she gives him food, and she builds furniture for him. And as a reward for that, Elisha proclaims that she will now have a child. She was previously barren. The child is born, and subsequently the child dies. She runs to Elisha, implores that he revive the child, which he does, and then the child is revived, alive again. Okay. So as I read the story, I'm going to read first the first part, which is, let's say, the first third of the story. I want you to keep the following questions in mind. What do you think the purpose of this story is? What's the message? What's the purpose? Why is the Tanakh focusing in on this? Clearly, it tells us about astounding miracles that Elisha was able to perform. Sorry. But we have many, many stories in the Tanakh that tell us about Elisha's miraculous abilities. Is it only to give us one other instance of a miraculous ability that Elisha has? Or is there more to it? Is there more of a message? Another thing that I want you to keep in mind is, what links can you find between this story in Malachim Beth Perek Dalet and Parshat Vayera, the story of Avram and Sarah? Okay, the beginning of the part. I know it's last week's Parsha, so we have to sort of put ourselves back into last week. But try to think about Parsha Vayera and what links there might be. Okay, so starting from Pasuk Hey. Vayi hayom vayavor Elisha el Shunem, v'sham isha gdola, v'tachazek bo le'chol lachem, v'yi midei avro yasur sham le'chol lachem. Right, this is a very important woman in Shunem, and she basically urged him to come and eat with him, and anytime he would pass through Shunem, he would go there to eat in her house. ותאמר אלישע, הננה ידעתי כי איש אלוקים קדוש הוא, עובר עלינו תמיד, נעשה נא עליית קיר קטנה ונשים לו שם מיטה ושולחן וכיסא ומנורה. והיה כבואו אלינו יצאו שם. Let's do something special for this man. He's an איש אלוקים קדוש. He comes to us a lot, and they make a special room with furniture for him. They really go all out to make him very, very comfortable for whenever he would come. Vayayon, it was on a specific day, Vayavo Shama, Vayasar El Ha'aliyah, Vayishtab Shama, he went to a special room, the attic, he went to sleep. Vayomer Al Gechazi Na'aro, Kral Shunami Tazot, Vayikrala Vata'amod Lefanav. Vayomer Lo, Emor Na'aleh, Hinei Charat Aleinu Ekol Ha'aradazot, Mela Atola, היש לדבר לך אל המלך או אל שר צבא ותאמר בתוך עמי אנוכי יושבת. But what can I do for you? You went all out. You went to all this trouble to make us feel at home. What can we do? We want to give you a reward. We want to help you out. We want to do something for you. And she says, בתוך עמי אנוכי יושבת. I sit amongst my people. I don't need anything. I'm taking care of something like that. ויאמר אומר לה סוף לה. ויאמר גחזי. אבל בן אין לה. באישה זקן. Right? He says to Gehazi, what could we do for her? And he says, she has no son, she has no child, and her husband's old. Vayomer krala, vayikrala, vata'amod bapatach, she stands in the doorway. Vayomer lamoed hazeh ka'et chayat at poveket ben. Vatomer al adoni isha elokim, al tachazeh b'shifchatecha. She's somehow startled by this news that she'll have a child. No, don't fool me. Vatahar ha'isha vatele ben. למועד הזה כעת חיה אשר דיבר אליה אלישה. That time next year, she had a child as Elisha had proclaimed. Okay, so first of all, let's start with the second question that I raised, which is the question of the link between this story and the Parsha. Okay, Parsha Vayera. Before we even get specifically to Parsha Vayera, we all know that this is one of a complex of stories in the Tanakh about Akarot. This is not the first time we hear about an Akarah who's given news that she will have a child, and she has a child. In fact, there are six such stories in the Tanakh. We have Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, Chana, the Isha Shunamit, and Eshet Manoah. Okay? I actually didn't in the last one in the wrong order. Eshet Manoah, we should say before, the Isha Shunamit, if we're going in Tanakh order. It's six stories. This is a very common theme in Tanakh, that there's a woman who's barren, and then somehow she's able to have children, which in itself tells us something, the fact that this is so common, right? It's all over the place, this idea of barren women finally being able to have children. It shows us something about how Hashem values Yisurim, that things aren't necessarily given to us so easily. Before Hashem gives all these women their prized child, they experience this period of barrenness, this period of struggle, a period of a little bit of suffering, so that they'll raise their level, their job, they'll dive in, they'll improve themselves, they'll reach a new level before they get the child. And that way they'll appreciate the child even more. Right? There's a value, and we see this not only with the barren women in Tanakh, but in general. Before Hashem made us into a nation, he put us through Shiabud Mitzrayim. Right? A very common is a midrash also that Hashem gave Klal Yisrael three Matanot Tovot, Torah, Eretz Yisrael, and Olam Haba. And before all of them, he always put us through Yisurim. Okay, this is the idea of Yisurim. That's the general pattern. What we see more interestingly is this story is specifically linked to the story of Sarah's barrenness, which is in Parsha Vayera, and the news that she will have a child and that she does have a child. Hey, this is really like a twin story to the story of Sarah and Abraham in Parsha Vayera. And I think this is the first reason why Chazal made this the Haftorah for Parsha Vayera. Can you help me think of what the links are? And Vayera is on the other side of the sheet. But you will hopefully open up your Tanakh eventually. I didn't ask you for the Tanakh. No, it's Chani. Okay, the reaction of both women is some kind of doubt, some sort of like venting of some negativity or doubt or something. Right, you see that in Pasuk Tezayin, in the story of Elisha, where she says, Av Adoni Ish Elokim, Al Tachazeh B'Shifratecha. And with Sarah, we see that in Pasuk Yudbet, Yudchet Yudbet, Vatitrak Sana Bikiva Lemur Akare, Yiloti, Haitali, and Nava, Adonai Zakei. Okay, what else?
Okay,
let's get to that answer. I definitely want to get to that, but not yet.
Okay,
because we didn't read that part yet. Yeah. Athena. Excuse me?
This time next year.
Okay, good. This is the only time in the Tanakh. There are only two times where we have this phrase of Ka'ekraya. So we use two times in the Tanakh in these two stories. In the story of Elisha, Lamo'ed Hazeh Ka'ekraya Atzol Bechetzen. And in the story of Sarah, in Pasuk Yud, Shol Vashuv Alecha Ka'ekraya V'hinei Ben Masara Ishtacha. Yeah, what else, Leah?
Both stories are preceded by acts of hospitality.
Great! Actually, yes, that's right, right? Both stories are preceded by acts of hospitality, and not just ordinary acts of hospitality, like, okay, well, if you need a place, come on in, you know, the way we sometimes do acts of hospitality, like, if you need a place, okay, you know, it's going to be hard for me. But they really went all out, both Abraham and Sarah, and Isha Shemali, and her husband, went all out, going into all lengths, to invite people in and make them comfortable, and at least the Isha Shunamit is building a special room for him and making furniture and urging him to come. Right? Like Avram awake by his tent and pull people in and feed them the most luxurious food. Okay, good. And they're both rewarded with a child, maybe because of that. You see the tremendous value of Hakmasar Rasim. What else? How old is the husband?
Zakein.
Right. Okay. So we see that with the Shunamit. In Pasuk Yedalet, Aval Ben Enla, the Isha Zakein. And we see that also in Parak Yudchet, in Vayera, Sukim Yud, Aleph, and Yudbet. Va'avram v'tzarev k'inim ba'im ba'yamin chadal liyot l'sara orach ha'ashim v'tzarev k'inim v'kirba l'imor acharei bilti bilati haitza li'adna v'adoni zakein. Okay, yeah, what else?
Both children died.
Wait, okay, hold on for that. We're going to get back to that. Same thing I said to Zippy. Yeah. Where are they standing, the women? Yeah, we're going to get to that. Yeah? Exactly, they're both Omdim Bapesa. Right? In Yurchet Yud, we see where Sarah is, the Sarah Shomach Pesach HaOel Vahu Acharav. And in Perek Dalet, Pasuk Ted Vav, Vayomer Krala, Vayikrala, Vatamos Bapasa. She stands in the doorway. Can we open the windows? Thank you. Okay, so we see, that's good. You don't need the air conditioning. Is that okay for you guys?
Yeah.
We see there are a lot of astounding parallels between these two stories. And it's not for, and we understand even more that it's not for nothing that Chazal linked these two together, the Haftorah and the Torah reading, right? The story of Elisha and Shunamit and Sarah and Abraham. All these stories which tell us they're really like twins. They're really like sisters. It's almost the same story happening twice. The language, Bapesa, Adonai Zakein, Ka'ek Chaya, clearly linked together, and the concept of Hasnasat Orfim, the concept of doubting, right, shows that they're clearly meant to be linked together. Okay, once we have these links, though, this is in general, in methodology, when learning Tanakh, when you see that two Tzachim are so similar, aside from noticing the similarities, very often, the similarities can highlight for us something that's strikingly different in one of the cases. Okay, and here I want to look at something that's really strikingly missing in the story of the Shunamit. When you see all these parallels, and think last week when we read in Shul the Parsha and the Haftorah, you should have noticed these parallels. But once you notice the parallels, you should say, wow, A, B, C, D, E, F, all the same, but what about G? Something's missing. And because you have those parallels so clear in front of your eyes, you'll notice the thing that's missing that you might not have noticed before. Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, she does, okay, we'll get back to the Dow thing. It's a little bit different. What's prominently missing in the beginning of the story? Yes?
She didn't bother in person.
We don't, just to get here before that, we don't hear about her barrenness. There's no description of her barrenness. Say, yes, we don't have it smack in the beginning of Parshat Vayera, but we have that in the introduction to the story of Avram and Sarah. In Breishit Yud Aleph Pasuk Lamed, we hear about Tehi Sarai Akara Ein Lavlad, or in Breishit Tet Zayin Aleph, the Sarai Eshet Avram Lo Yaldalo, the Lash Yisram Idrit, the Shema Hagar, we hear Belo Yaldala. No, sorry. In the story of Rivka, for instance, we hear gracious Chafei, Chaf Aleph, Ve'yatar Yitzchak Hashem Lenochach Yishto Ki Acharayi, Ve'yatar Lo Hashem V'tar Rivka Yishto. Or in the story of Raphael, in Perikot Tet Pasuk Lamed Aleph, Ve'yar Hashem Kisnoa Le'al Ve'yitzchak Et Rachma, Ve'Raphael Achara. Or in the story of Esha Manoach, in Shoftim Yud Gimel Bet, Ve'yi Isha Achad Yitzara, Mimishpachat Hazani Ushmo Manoach, Ve'yishto Achara, Ve'lo Yalaza. Or the story of Chana. Did I say Chana before? It says in Shmuel Aleph, Perek Aleph, Pasuk Bet, V'lo Shein Hashem Shein Achat Chana, V'Shein Hashem Yitnina, V'yi L'Pnina Yiladim, U'L'Chana Ein Yiladim. In every other case we hear, sometimes pretty close to the beginning of the story, or the actual first pasuk, we hear that the woman is barren. But that's the main problem that the Perek is dealing with. But here in our parak, it's very, very striking. Not only does the Tanakh not introduce her as a barren woman, but even more perplexing than that, Elisha's living in her house, and he can't figure out what to do in order to reward her. You helped me so much, you went all out for me, what could I do to help you? Now he's a barren woman before his eyes, and he's not even noticing that she's barren for some reason. And when he asks her, what can we do to help you? She says, no, I don't need anything. I'm fine. The talk on me, I'm okay, I'll shove it. And the only way that he comes to her barrenness is Gehazi has to say, you know what? By the way, she's barren. And she has no children. Her husband's old. It comes as an afterthought. And so why is it that the Tanakh does not mention her barrenness from the outset? Why is it that Elisha doesn't notice that she's barren? He has to be pretty sick in order to not to notice that a woman who is, whatever, 40 years old, however old she is, 40, 50, 30, I don't know how old she is. But a certain amount of, you know, she's not 20, because then it wouldn't be anything, any kind of miracle here that she can have a child. She wouldn't be considered barren yet. Right? So she's a woman who's barren, but nobody's noticing it. Why doesn't Elisha notice it? Okay? Why doesn't the Shunammite mention it? Why doesn't she ask to have a child? Okay, so I heard a very interesting idea by Ross Samet, and I actually read it in an article, which I think is the key to what might be going on here. So what he says is that perhaps the reason why the woman's plight isn't mentioned here, right, why the Shunammite's plight isn't mentioned, and Elisha doesn't notice it, and she doesn't ask for a child, might have to do with her reaction to the barrenness. And different people react in different ways to life problems. Some people react to certain struggles, certain challenges they have, by working really, really hard to overcome the challenge. Let's say the shidduch crisis, right? So if a person's single for a long time and they're already getting much older and they're not finding somebody, they can either, how can they respond to that? They can either respond by networking and dominating and doing whatever they can in order to really try to find their mate, or they can say, you know, I'm tired of this already, this is too painful for me, I'm going to focus on other things, I'm going to focus on my career, I'm going to focus on doing other good things, and sort of bury the need to have a mate, right, deep down, and focus on other things. So if Samet says that maybe this is what's going on, how else do we explain the pshat, these very strange anomalies in the pshat, the lack of mention of her barrenness, and that she doesn't ask to have a child? Right, so perhaps the way we can explain this is by saying is that she was suppressing her need for a child somehow. Maybe at some point she did want a child. Maybe it was years and she was tired of wanting a child. So she started suppressing that need and she went into a certain psychological denial. Right? She didn't want to, she wasn't open to that need anymore. She didn't even have that want anymore. She didn't want to let herself feel anymore. Because it would be too painful for her to continuously worry about this and try again and again. Okay, this is strikingly different than the other acharot that we see in the Tanakh. That try again and again, they keep on trying through tefillah chana, right? She tried for such a long time with tefillah and very, very striking measure. She fasts, she won't eat. She's not giving up. Raphael. So let's try lots of different things, Raphael, with your Judaim and with our handmaiden, and Sarah with our handmaiden, we see lots of tefillah. Right, but here we don't see anything. She's suppressing our needs. She's not relating to it. Perhaps even we can add it. Maybe she never even wanted a child. Who knows? Okay, but this need for a child is not foremost in her mind. Right? And this explains also, no, first of all, we do see that she's focused on other things. She's an Isha Gdolah. She's an important person. She's not a Neva who's just sitting and crying all the time. Right? She's focusing on other things. She sees she's not having children. She's an important person. She has wealth, estate, fields, servants. She says, "B'tochamia nosei yoshevet." She's well established in the community. She engages in chesed, hakmasar orchim. She's doing something good with her life. We hear from Pasuk Chaf Gimel a little bit later. We'll see in a few minutes that she goes to an Isha Elokim regularly on Shabbos, on Yom Kippur. She's going to Torah Shirim. Okay, so she's not. She's saying, you know what? I can't constantly maintain over this. I'm going to do chesed instead. I'm not going to think about this need. I don't even have that need anymore. I'm going to do chesed. I'm going to go to shirim. I'm going to involve myself in the community. I'm going to do other things. And all these activities help the shunamit block out her need to have children to such an extent that look at her reaction to the news. See, this is another subtle difference between her reaction and Sarah's reaction. They both have some sort of denial or negative reaction to the news that they have a child, but look how different they are. What's Sarah's reaction? Sarah's reaction is in Yudchet Yudbet, "Atitzchak Sarah dekirba lemor acharei diloti haitali etna v'adoni zakein." Right? Is it possible for me to have a child? She's questioning the wonder of how could she have a child after she's postmenopausal. It's a biological impossibility. That's her reaction. Is this biologically possible anymore? Like she's questioning it on a biological level. As opposed to the Isha Shunamit, there's something different going on. What does she say? "V'tomer al Adoni Isha Elokim, al tichazeit b'shifratecha." No, don't fool me. Right? She doesn't want to enter into this arena anymore. She's blocked it off for so long. Right? She's not dealing with this need anymore that when he says to her out of nowhere, she didn't even ask for it. Right? She didn't even ask for a child. So when he says, "This time next year you will have a child," she's like, no, don't fool me. Maybe I don't even want that. But maybe if you start getting involved in this, maybe it won't work out. And I don't want to have to start thinking about this and then be disappointed. Okay, so we see this is a good explanation for why the barrenness is so de-emphasized here, which we notice because of the parallels. I don't know if we would notice it so much if not for the parallels. Okay, which brings us to another similarity that Zippy and Leah are trying to get to, and I should correct you, which is a parallel that has to do with the fate of the son born. Okay, there's something similar that happens to Yitzchak and the Bein Isha HaShunamit. Okay, what is that that's similar? They both go through a death or near-death experience. In the case of Yitzchak, it's a near-death experience. In the case of the Ben HaShunamit, he actually dies. And then they're either revived, in the case of the Ben HaShunamit, or in Yitzchak's case, as he was about to be killed, there's this message not to be killed. Avram shouldn't kill him at Akedat Yitzchak, and he survived. Okay, because of divine intervention, they're able to survive this death or near-death experience. Also, a very astounding parallel. When you read the Haftorah after the parsha last week in Shul, right, you can also get yourself thinking about what happens to both of these children. They die and they come alive. They almost died and they survive that near-death experience. What's going on? What's the meaning of this parallel? Which brings to mind a question here. If you look in Sukkim Yudchad and on, okay, we hear about this death experience. Let me just read it inside. "Vaygdal ha'yeled, vayi ayom, vayisei el aviv el akostrim." He grows up, he goes out to, on one day, he goes out to his father, to the reapers. "Vayomer el aviv, roshi, roshi, vayomer el anar, sa'eo el imo, vayisa'eo vivi'eo el imo, vayishev al birkea ad asorayim vayamo." Okay, he has a bad headache. Something's wrong with him. He says, "Roshi, Roshi, They say, take him to his mother. They bring him to his mother. She sits on his knees until Sarayim, and then he dies. The glaring, what's the glaring question when you read this? Why did he die? What's going on here? This child was born through a miracle. Elisha proclaimed that a barren woman will have a child. He's finally born. And then the only thing that we hear about him is that he died. His whole life, it's not focused in on here by the Tanakh. It's compressed into one pasuk or whatever. It's compressed into two words, Vayigdal hayelet, and then we hear about he had a headache and he died. Okay, why did he die? So of course on a mundane level there's an explanation. It says Roshi, Roshi, he was in the field. Maybe it was heat stroke, dehydration, I don't know, whatever it is. There's a mundane reason why he died. There's a medical reason why he died. But the better question is a theological question. Why did God allow him to die? A child born through a miracle should just die then? Hey, what's going on here? What was the reason, the underlying reason, the religious reason, the theological reason for his death? So what I'd like to suggest is perhaps we drew a parallel to Akedat Yitzchak. You know, when I looked at the Mefarshim on Melachim Bet Perek Dalet, I couldn't find any Mefarshim that addressed this question, which I thought was very strange. But to me, this is the biggest question here. A child is born through a miracle, and then he dies. So the next thing we hear he dies. Why did he die? Right, so, I don't know, I looked at Rashi, I looked at Mitzvah Tavir, I looked at Radak, I looked at Rabah, I couldn't find any answers. So what got me thinking is maybe we can do something with this parallel with Akedat Yitzchak. Maybe somehow this can explain for us, the parallel can explain for us why he might have died. We don't know, we're not with him, right? So we don't know for sure, but maybe this can give us a clue as to a possibility. So the reason why this can give us a clue is because in Akedat Yitzchak, things are more clear for us. The Torah tells us maybe what Abraham didn't know, which is why Hashem gave Abraham this experience of his son almost dying and then being revived. We know, we have it clear to us in the story of Akedat Yitzchak. So perhaps we can extrapolate from there to here. So what does it say in the story of Akedat Yitzchak? The beginning of the parak in Bereishis Chafbet at the end of Parshat Vayera tells us what's going on here from the theological perspective. Why did Yitzchak and Avram go through this experience? And it says, "Vayihi achar Avram ha'ela, va'elokim nisat Avram, va'yomer elav Avram, va'yomer hineni." We hear about Akedat Yitzchak. "Vayihi achar Avram ha'ela, va'elokim nisat et Avraham." We hear what's going on. We hear the backdrop. We hear as if what's in God's mind. What God is doing is testing Avraham. And we see that this is actually an incredible test that Avraham is being tested with. Will we be able to put aside God's promise that his seed will come through Yitzchak and be willing to sacrifice his son? Will he be able to put aside his natural love for any child? All the more so his love for this child that he's been waiting for so long and be willing to sacrifice him? Will he be willing to put aside his mida of chesed, which is so ingrained in him? He's an ish chesed. That's all he's seeking to do. Look at him with his hakmasah of him in the beginning of the parsha. And then look at what he's required to do at the end of the parsha. Sacrifice his son? A person that's standing by the doorway of his tent looking for guests so they can feed the guests. And help them in whatever way possible, would certainly not want to feed his son. Kill his son. He'd want to feed his son, but he won't want to kill his son. Okay, so this is a tremendous test for Avraham, whether he's going to be able to subserviate his own logic, his own desires, his will, his midah chesed, his natural love for his child, all to the will of God. Even if it doesn't make any sense to him and it goes against his grain totally. And we see that Avram passes the test, right? We see the level of his Avodat Hashem, how committed he is to God. But we have a question with Akedat Yitzchak, and with this phrase by Elohim Nisat Avraham. We talked about it in the Parshanutka a while ago, before Rosh Hashanah. Which is a theological question. Later on in Parashat and Pasuk Yudet, Hashem says, after it's all over, after he was willing to sacrifice his son, Ataya dati ki Elohim ata. Now I know that you're Yirei Elohim. You passed the test, and now I know the truth about your Yirei Elohim. So But this is very strange. It's theologically difficult. Doesn't God know everything all the time? Did God need Abraham to do this test so that he knows that he's an array of a kid? He needed information, and that's why he put Abraham through this test? Right? Doesn't he know Abraham's level of miraculous kin? What's going on here? So the Ramban, of course we have to bring in Ramban, even though it's really not even partial next year at all. Always have to bring in Ramban somehow, right? The Ramban gives a famous solution when he says, Ma'alokim Nisat Abraham. I'll just read it inside. You don't have it in front of you, but I'll read it from my notes. In Yama Nisayon Mubazati, Babor Hayot Mase Adam, Rishut Mukwetu, the adult year, you say Yasef, Imo Yasef, Lo Yasef, Yikare Nisayon Misarim Nisef. Aval Aminase Yisorach Yisadelo, why does Hashem do this Nisayon? Lo Siha Dabar Minakoa Elapoal, Liot Lo Skarma Asefo, Lo Skar Lepo Bilbad. V'dak Hashem tzadik yivchan. Kishehu yaveh v'tzadik yishayaseh ritzono, v'chafes lahatziko, yisaveh oto v'nisuyon v'lo yivchan et harishayim asher lo yishmu. V'yimei kol ha-nisyonot shabatera l'tovat ha-minuseh. Okay, so what's Ramban's idea? The idea is that Hashem, of course Hashem didn't need this test to get information. He knows, even in advance, whether he's going to pass the test or not. It's not for the sake of God's knowledge. God is omniscient. Okay, it's not for that. What is the point of this test and all tests, says the Ramban? To bring out things from potential to actual. Right? What Hashem wants to do by subjecting people to different tests and different struggles in life. And he says that Hashem is more likely to test tzaddikim and give tzaddikim the benefit of this experience, right? Is to bring out potentialities that they might have in their character, spiritual potentials, different things that they might have that they're not yet actualizing. And the experience helps them actualize it. It helps it become much more real for that person. Right? They really acquire that level because they went through the test. It's for the sake of the testee, not for the sake of Hashem. So Avraham Avinu was in a certain level of Yirat Elokim before Akedat Yitzchak. But after Akedat Yitzchak, Atah Yadati Ki Yirat Elokim Atah. Now you've proven that you're on this next level of Yirat Elokim. Now you're really a Yirat Elokim because you've passed the test for your own sake. You showed yourself and the world, right, that you're willing to sacrifice your son, even though it goes against your whole nature. Right? You're totally subservient to God, to an extreme, to the biggest extreme, and you've proven that by going through the test. Okay, we all know there's a big difference between theory and actuality, right? And that's why Hashem puts people through tests. Because what people have in theory, like Abraham had Yirat Elokim in theory, doesn't necessarily always translate to actuality. You know, you could study Kibbud Av V'Em. This is the father in the room. You could study Kibbud Av V'Em all year long, let's say, and then go back home after the year in Israel, and then boom, right off the plane, you start yelling at your father or your mother, right? Because theory doesn't always translate into practice. There's a cute story that Rabbi Fran tells that I always like to tell in this vein. Of a young man who was given a part in a play, a very small part, right? And the part was, when the curtain would rise and the cannon would boom, he was supposed to say, "Hark, I hear the cannon roar." So he's practicing all day long, he practices in the morning, he wakes up and he says, "Moda'ani," and then he says, "When the cannon roars, I'm going to say, hark, I hear the cannon roar." And when he's walking down the street, he's mumbling to himself, "Hark, I hear the cannon roar. Wait, make sure, let me get the line down. Hark, I hear the cannon roar." All day long, in his sleep, he knows it's cold. "Hark, I hear the cannon roar." And then the big day comes, the curtain rises, the cannon booms, and he turns around and goes, "Hey, what the hell was that?" Totally messed up, right? So that's why Hashem gives people nisyonot, to translate theory into actuality. Without the nisayon, who knows whether you're going to be able to really do it, actualize your potential, unless you have the real practical experience which puts you in the situation to actualize your potential. And how can we apply this to the case of the Shunami? Because remember our question. Our question is, why did this child die? Or what's going on here? Why is Hashem putting the Shunami? you allow me through this situation? I mean, to ask another question, why is Hashem putting the son through the situation? But that question we'll put away for now. Why is he putting the Shunamit through this situation? Can we somehow apply the Ramban's idea of what Nisyonot are about to the Shunamit? Is it possible, perhaps, that what Hashem is doing here, or we don't know for sure, but we're just going to suggest a theory, is somehow he's putting her through this situation so that she can actualize certain potential that she might have within her to bring out something that's not coming out yet? Right, to help her rise to a new level, and this experience might help transform her. It might help actualize her potential in some way. But Ramban says, this is what all this channel in the Torah are about. And I don't think he only means in the Torah. It doesn't matter in life. When we face difficult situations, right, we can look at them as nisyonot, as opportunities to grow, to actualize certain potentials that we have not yet actualized. So how can this be applied in the case of the Shunamit? So what have we seen so far about the Shunamit? Well, we saw two things. Number one, we saw that she's resigned to her barrenness before she has, as Elisha proclaims it to herself. She's resigned to her barrenness. She's not focused on that. And that attitude of resignation, of a psychological denial or a block about this need, carried over until when she hears that a child will be born. When Elisha proclaims, "Lamaleda beka eich haya atzol beka den," she says, "No, don't fool me. I don't want it. I don't want to go in that way. I don't want to go down that path. Don't tell me I'm going to have a child." Right? So she denies it. Which brings us to two other very fascinating differences between the Shunamit and Sarah. Okay, and really all the other Akharot. Which is also highlighted when we look at the spirit of the Shunamit against its Parsha Vayera. What do we have with all the other Akharot? What's their response to the birth? Thank you, exactly. Thanksgiving's coming up, right? Thank you. Right. Sarah. Right? So in Parsha Vayera. In Perakot Aleph, Pasuk Vav, Atomer Sarah, Kol Shasali Elokim, Kol Hashemeh Yitzafek Li, Atomer Nimi Lel Avram, Hinita Banim Sarah, Ki Amalasi Ben Luzkunav, Vayizal Ayelet, In Perakot Aleph, Pasuk Chet, Vayigamal, Vayas Avram, Mishte Gadol, Vayom Yigamel Yitzchak. They reacted with songs of thanksgiving by making a Su'udah. A Su'udah, Hakarat Atov, Su'udah Su'udayah, for the birth of this child. But it's not only Sarah and Avram. It's the other Akharot as well. Raphael says, Asat Elokim and Kharpati, by Tikrat Shmo Yosef, Remor Yosef Hashem li ben afer. Let this continue, this good track here. I don't know, I'm not familiar with that word. Hannah is a very good example, right? Her child is born and she overflows with thankfulness. The whole Tilat Gana and Shmuel Aleph Perek Bet is a song of thankfulness. That's a tongue twister. V'kitalel chana v'tomar Alach lidi b'Hashem, Ramach karni b'Hashem, Rachavti alay v'ayti simachti v'yishu atecha. Ein kadosh k'Hashem ki ein dotecha, v'ein sur k'Elokeinu, etc. What do we see with the Shunamit? Where's her thanksgiving? There's no thanksgiving. What do we hear about with the Shunamit? Batahara isha batelet ben mamalein hazeh ka'et chaya asher diber elea Elisha. Blank. Right? Nothing. We don't hear any song of thanksgiving. We hear no joy. We hear no thankfulness. The birth is told to us in a very dry, matter-of-fact way. And more than that, what do we hear with all the other Akharot? What happens to that child that's born through a miracle? They become great. They become great leaders of Am Yisrael. They have a great destiny. And their mothers and their fathers raise them towards that great destiny. Yitzchak and Yaakov and Yosef and Shmuel and Shimshon, right, all raised to a great destiny. But what do we hear about this child? Vayigdal hayeled, he grew up. Everybody grows up, unless they die, which this child ends up doing, right? Everyone grows up. There's no specific consecration of his life towards something great. He's an anonymous peasant boy. He's not raised towards any sort of mission. We don't hear about any mission. We don't hear about any destiny. listening. We don't hear about any education that he's given. He's not trained to be great. 1 second. Can I take a question, Jackson?
Yes.
We see no sense that she took this mace as something that's obligating her to do something back with this child, give this child back to Hashem in any kind of way. So different than Sarah and Yitzchak. So different than Hannah and Shmuel. Now, I was looking online, actually, this is a really dumb reason for looking online about this, but you know, you have to put up signs. So I was trying to find a sign. So I knew I wanted to speak about the Shunamit, but I just wanted some kind of cool title. So I was looking online for a cool title, and then I bumped into a Sicha by Rav Nebenfeld, which happened to have been good anyway, so I'll show a little bit of a Sicha that I read. But I didn't find a good title, so anyway. But I found a good Sicha. So look what Rav Nebenfeld says about this. He says, we read of the incident involving the Shunamit woman. So graciously, I'm sure he didn't say this, he was translated because he speaks Hebrew, but so graciously hosted Elisha with all the associated honor and glory befitting a prophet of Hashem. Elisha provided her with the son he had promised her. The son suddenly died and a miracle happened in which Elisha was able to revive the son. Why did the son have to die? The prophet does not explicitly tell us why he died. But an analysis of the sequence of events perhaps can shed some light. We are told by Yisal HaYeled, by Ni HaYom, by Yisal El Aviv El HaKosim. The boy grew up. It happened one day. He went out to his father to the reapers in the field. The child grew up. Send him to a yeshiva. Why is he being sent to the field? Is this the reason Hashem performs a miracle in order that we should have another worker in the field? Thank God there are many reapers. Our matriarch Sarah was blessed with a son. She raised him to become Yitzchak, the Sela Olah, the lamb for the offering. Rachel was blessed with a son whom she raised to become Yosef HaTzadik. Hannah was given a son to whom she sent to Shiloh to learn with Eli. She vowed that he'll become a Nazir his entire life. This Shunamit was given a son and she sent him to the field? This is not sufficient reason for Hashem to perform a miracle. If this is what becomes of him, there is no purpose in this miracle. Becoming a reaper did not justify having this child in this world. Right? There's also this beautiful piece by Rav Soloveitchik that I want you to quote, in Kol Hodid Ofei, where he talks about the need to appreciate when a person is bestowed with a gift from God, how he needs to appreciate that. He says the following, Chasdei Hashem Omer Et HaYahadut Einam Nitanim La'adam Matnat Chinam. Right? These chasadim from Hashem are not given free. Hein Mechayivim Mashu. It we have a moral obligation because of them. Amnam hashpa'at ha-chesed ba'am yadok tukha ha-gedusha wa-rakava shokadosh brako aval ein hi matana lo shio. It's not an unconditional gift. Over those times, ein hi doron muklat. Hashpa'at tova hi tamid b'tchinat matana al-tnai. Almanat lahavzir all his man. Kishakadosh Baruch Hu notein l'adam osher b'nechasim hashpa'ah b'kavod. And any gift that we get from God, not only life, but also wealth and bringing whatever it is, honor. Allah mekabel madat eich l'shtamesh b'hem. Eich l'gmol chesed im chasdei Hashem hanovim uba'im elav mimakor insof. In ein rov tova meviyat ha'adam lidei hishtabdut. If he doesn't come to dedicate a gift back to God, this is an essential sin. Right? And in its path, in its wake, will come tragedy very often, which will remind the person what he's supposed to do with the gift given. And then he goes on and he says, if this is the case with regular Chasdei Hashem, that Hashem gives everybody the gift of life or the gift of wealth, the gift of a brain, whatever it is, all the more so when something given to us through miracles. If God's changing nature to something, it cries out to us to do something special with the result of that miracle. Okay, so perhaps what's going on here is maybe what we can say is Hashem put the Shunamit through this experience in order to help her bring something out into actuality, something that she had in potential, but she wasn't actualizing yet. which is feelings of appreciation for being a mother. This might have been a hangover from our previous reaction to her barrenness, which is understandable. But now she has a child. And once she has a child, she has to be thankful that she has a child. She has to react with thankfulness. She has to appreciate that child. And she has to consecrate that child to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. She has to make something great of his life because he was born through a miracle. Every mother has to make something great with his child's life, right? But all the more so, a child born through a miracle. And she had not yet done that. Of course, somewhere deep down, there was a feeling of love for this child. There was some bit of appreciation somewhere, but she wasn't yet expressing it. So perhaps what Hashem did was take away this child's life in order to shake her up and make her realize how much she does really care. And that's what we see. If you look at the rest of the parak, this is exactly what we see. We see that this experience is nisayon, right, it's destined a certain transformation in the Shashman Amit. Look from Pasuk Yud Tet. This is the first time that she's called Imo. Beforehand, she's not called Imo. And Vayisa'eu Vayivieu Imo. Vayishav al birkeha ad ha'tzorarim vayamo. He sits on her knees until he dies. She's caring for him. She's toddling him. We see a physical connection between her and her son that we didn't see before. Elisha said, Lamo'ed hazeh ke'eit chaya at chovek yeten. Right? This sign that said, you will be carrying the child, but she had not yet carried the child. So she dumped him off in the nursery. Now, she's probably not exactly. We see no expression of a connection between her and her child, her and her son. It's only when he's dying that we see him finally on her knees. And then we see, without time to read through the whole paragraph, we see how she rushes to do whatever she can to get this child alive. She puts him down on the bed, and then she runs out, and she rushes past everybody. She saddles her donkey, and she refuses to talk to anybody along the way. And people that say, is everything okay? She says, shalom, shalom, shalom. She doesn't want to say what's going on. She doesn't want to say the word death, because she doesn't want it to be real. She's doing everything to try to bring this child back to life. And when she gets to Elisha, she falls on his feet, and she makes him swear that he's going to come back and bring this child alive. She pulls him to bring the child alive. Now, at this point, after this experience, who is she like? Now she's like the other imahos, now who were akarot previously. Now she's like Chana. Now she's like Sarah. Now she's determined to have a child. She wants a child. She has no child and she wants a child. But she's going to do anything to have a child. Like Chana was fasting and crying and making a nezer. She's making Elisha swear that this child will come to life. Right? So we see here that the boy's death really starts within her this feeling of appreciation, this feeling of need, this feeling of, I want this child. I will be thankful when I have this child. I will do something great with this child. I'm not going to take this child for granted. And the irony of the situation, which is something that we all fall into this trap of, is she didn't appreciate what she had until she lost it, until she was in the situation where she no longer had it. And not having it anymore made her want it now. And how often do we fall into this trap where we don't appreciate our life and our health and our money, right? And have to show them that we should have nisyonot like this to make us appreciate it. Right? We need to work on appreciating what we have when we have it. We see that this test really affected a transformation in her. And it ends when Elisha, when the child is finally revived in Pasuk Lamed Zayin, Elisha first brings down the son of the Shunammite. He revives her. So Pasuk Lamed Vav. Vayikra al Gehazi vayomer kra al Shunammite hazot vayikra'eha vatavo emav vayomer si'i b'nech. Now carry your child. Vatavo vatipol al raglav vatishtahu arsa. She falls down to Elisha, expressing thankfulness. So here's the first time that we see an expression of thanksgiving, of thankfulness for having this child. Vatisa et bena vatise. Now she carries her child and she goes out. She doesn't just say, come along, kid. I forgot to say, he doesn't even have a name before this. What do Chazal say?
Who did this child end up becoming?
Habakkuk.
So why did I say he became Habakkuk? Okay, first of all, you should notice a linguistic connection here. And Chazal are bothered by the anonymity of this child, who she doesn't actually love until the end. Okay, so this child becomes Habakkuk. And when you look in the Nevuah of Habakkuk, we certainly don't have time to analyze it. But there are three parakim, and the last parak is all about thanksgiving to Hashem because of his experiences. Okay, so there's a logic to Chazal's connection of this child to Habakkuk. What they're trying to say, besides the linguistic connection, is that the Shunammite learned her lesson. And she was thankful, and she loved this child. And then this child became someone great. He became a leader of Am Yisrael, just like the other sons of the other Akharot. He had a destiny, a specific, consecrated, dedicated destiny. He became Habakkuk Hanavi. He served Klal Yisrael. And this child also learned the lesson of appreciation. And he expressed his appreciation after his nevuah. The last part of his nevuah was all dedicated to a song of appreciation to Hashem for everything that Hashem had done for him. Okay, so what we saw here is that the parallels between last week's Haftorah and Parsha are not for nothing. We saw astounding parallels, linguistically and thematically, which were interesting in their own right, but they also highlighted to us what's unique about this story. The Shunamit's initial reaction to our barrenness. We don't see a reaction. There's a reaction of denial, a blocking, a psychological blocking of her need for having children, which extended even once she heard the news. And even after the child is born, we don't see any thankfulness, any consecration of this child. And because of this, right, we've also extrapolated through analogy to the Parsha that perhaps just like Yitzchak and Avraham went through a nisayon of near death and then revival, maybe this child was subject to death and she would have to fight for his life in order to provide her with a nisayon, in order to actualize something that was latent in her, which she wasn't expressing, which is a feeling of appreciation and thankfulness and a desire to consecrate this child to become something great. It's something you could do with any parsha of Torah if you put enough time into it. But finally, the point that I want to get across here, obviously on a personal level, is that this is giving us a very powerful message, which is we all have a very big challenge. We very often fail to appreciate what Hashem gives us. We take it for granted. What we need to do is notice and recognize everything that Hashem gives us. Not only the gifts of life, but every talent, every kli that Hashem gives us. And we need to work on channeling that back towards the Avodas Hashem. That was the purpose why God gave us those. That's the reason why God gives us these gifts. It's not just to ignore it, as Reb Nebenfel says. Hashem doesn't just give us a life so we could just go and pass through life and not do anything great with it. He gives us our life and all our unique talents so that we can use them in order to fulfill our unique potential in serving Hashem. Just one note about Thanksgiving. I don't know, I was thinking about Thanksgiving. I was really having trouble because I really wanted to give this year before Parsha of the Year. It would have made a lot more sense. But I was trying to think of a way to tie it into the time of year. So I mentioned Thanksgiving. So I'll tie it into Thanksgiving. First of all, Thanksgiving. So that's one. Thanksgiving. You need to give Thanksgiving. Give thanks. Okay. But in the Constitution, it talks about three inalienable rights. Life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. Yet we see that many, many people are just not happy, right? Just totally not happy. Many, many Americans, but also Israelis and people around the world are clinically depressed and very depressed. And most people are not able to pursue happiness so easily. So what is the secret to pursuing happiness? Obviously, this is a very big topic and we can't talk about this in 30 seconds. But one of the secrets to pursuing happiness is just appreciating what God has given us. Appreciate what we have in life. Very often we're not happy because we're looking at what we don't have, what other people have and what we don't have, how we fall short of something that we want. Instead of looking at what we do have and appreciating what we have. And if we focus on appreciating what we have, and this idea of appreciating needs focus. Unfortunately, it's not something that comes naturally for a lot of us. Some of us it comes more naturally for for me, as an example, I have to focus on it. I have to review in my mind every night what I'm thankful for. Because otherwise I might not feel so happy. Right? So I think about what I'm thankful for. And it makes me happy because I realize how many gifts I have. The whole davening is aimed towards that. If you want to know how to do that, just daven with kavana. Then we go on. Reishin chachma yirat Hashem. I was given this soul. God returned my soul. It's a gift from God. Now I have to do something with it. I have to be a yirat Hashem. That's what I have to do. Elokayne shemashin atata vitaurahi. Atabrata atayitada. That whole thing, right? And then we go into Zirkot HaTorah. Our life was a gift from God to be used for a purpose, but we need to focus on it, or else we can forget about it. The whole Birkot HaShachar of that, right? Shalah Asani Goy, Shalah Asani Avet, Shalah Asani Kirtono, Pokeach Ivrim, Malbish Arumim. Every single thing that we have is a gift from God, but we need to focus on it. And that's what brings us joy. One second, you can give me one more minute? Even though, the person that I know that's the most joyous in the world is my grandmother. Okay, so my grandmother, Kaninar, is 87 years old or something like that. So she is a person that is sunshine. And how does she become so happy? She became so happy by, and I spoke to her about this many times, by focusing on the things she has to appreciate. All day long she focuses on it. If you would speak to her, I'll tell you in a second, now she can't really speak at this year. But in the past, if you see her, she used to live in our house 3 months a year. She used to come and visit us in Eretz Yisrael. It was a real chut. I loved her influence on my kids. It was just amazing. She'd come down, it'd be like this dreary day, very cloudy, and she'd go, "What a beautiful day! It looks like it's about to rain." And then she'd look at me. I'd be wearing some ratty t-shirt that I was wearing to sleep, you know. She's like, "That is a beautiful t-shirt. You look so lovely today." And I think, are you crazy, right? I don't look lovely. I look disgusting. Actually, I'm very tired of it. But from her perspective, she's looking at the good that she sees in me. She's looking at the fact that I have clothing. When she came to my son's bar mitzvah several years ago, she kept on saying, "I have to thank God He allowed me to live this long to be able to see my grandson's bar mitzvah in Eretz Yisrael. Look outside." She goes on and on. Look outside. Sometimes it can make you a little tired from hearing it, but you know you have something to learn from it. Look outside on the hills. They're just blossoming with settlements. How Israel's growing, and on and on. And look at that tree. How it's blossoming. Look how the leaf is shaped this way and this color. And look at that fruit. How deliciously orange. And look on and on. So about a year and a half ago, she had an incident where she couldn't breathe and she was brought to the hospital. And they had to put a respirator in her. And she then they couldn't wean her from the respirator, so she needed a trach, which is like a tube through her throat. Sort of, I don't know, I'm not a doctor, but I'll just say it in layman's terms. And she is reliant now on oxygen sometimes. And she also can't really talk. It interferes with her voice box, so she has to sort of press down on her throat in order to talk. So last May was my daughter's wedding, and my parents flew her in for the wedding. She's still in great spirits and in great health, even though she's tied to an oxygen tank and can't talk. And not being able to talk to my grandmother, I think you got the point that she's very talkative, right? Mm-hmm. It must not be easy. All she could say when she came is, "I have to thank God for my life." She could barely talk. She had to go like this. "Thank God I'm here. Thank God for my life. Thank God I can see my granddaughter getting married. My great-granddaughter getting married. Thank God I could come once again to Israel. Thank God I could see her house again and again and again." She was so, so thankful. You can look at this woman and say, "How pathetic. What a sad life. This woman should be really bitter. Her husband died 10 years ago. She lives on the 7th floor of some stinky apartment in Borough Park. She's, now besides the fact that she's living alone, right, by herself, she also has all these medical issues. She can't talk. Her whole joy in life is talking. She can't talk. She can't breathe without an oxygen tank. A few months ago, unfortunately, she fell and she broke her hip and she broke her arm. Still an amazing spirit. Why? She's amazing because she focuses on all the gifts that God is going to give her. So she can't talk, but she could see, and she could use her hands, and she could appreciate the nachas that she has from her children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren. And so this is a model for us, and this is a lesson, I think, that we can learn from the story of the Shunammite.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.